Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Adam from Toronto, and I support Creative Control because Vish is full stop one of the best arts interviewers in Canada, or anywhere in the world, really. He approaches every episode like he's known the artist for years, creating a conversational atmosphere that gets straight to the heart of the work. No one else in podcasting gets it quite right like he does, with a mixture of meticulous research, wise artistic insights, and well-humored personal connections. I proudly support Vish and Creative Control on Patreon. You should too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Things are shit, but they're gonna be okay. And I'm gonna see the otters. There aren't any otters. There are. Well, we can check, and I'm gonna see the water caterpillar.
Florence Shaw and Lewis Maynard are both inventive and talented songwriters who hail from South London in the United Kingdom. Along with their longtime mates Nick Buxton and Tom Dowse, Maynard and Shaw formed the refreshingly unique rock band Dry Cleaning in 2017, and subsequently released critically acclaimed singles, EPs, and two albums to date, including their 2021 breakthrough LP, New Long Leg. On October 21st, 2022, 4AD released Stumpwork, the second Dry Cleaning full-length and one of the most brilliant and compelling records of the year. Florence and Lewis and I connected recently during some brief downtime on Dry Cleaning's busy world tour, and we discuss things like the ozone layer hole above New Zealand that likely caused Lewis's recent sunburn, his move from hip-hop turntablism to punk rock bass guitar, why Florence is drawn to different forms of shuffling, her unlikely post as a lead lyricist and singer in a band that was built for friendship, and some silliness, how dry cleaning's work helped the band and Lewis in particular grieve and cope with the loss of his mother, how family dynamics informed Florence's lyrics on Stump Work, and a song about a missing tortoise, good advice they received from Simon Le Bon, endless touring and new songs, other future plans, and much, much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into making this show each week. Again, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol if you are so inclined to support the show with a monthly donation. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and wonderful staff who will happily help you fulfill anything you want. Say you want to order a copy of Stump Work by dry cleaning. I mean, that's easy. You just go to blackbird.ca, type stuff in, particularly the words Stump Work or dry cleaning, and you should be able to order yourself a copy right there. Again, that website, blackbird.ca. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 740 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Florence Shaw and Lewis Maynard from Dry Cleaning, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. And I'm gonna see the water caterpillar. There's no such thing. Nice idea. Hi, Florence. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Vish.
It's nice to meet you and see you, even though we're nowhere near each other. Where in the world are you today?
We're in Auckland in New Zealand. Also, I should say, how are you?
Oh, that's nice. I'm good. This is I don't know if you know this. It's like a bit of a running gag on the show where I say, hey, how are you? And people say, I'm fine. And I go,
oh,
okay.
Really?
No, I don't mean to be.
I didn't know that.
No, it's just a funny thing. And I've been trying to stop myself from saying, I'm fine too. Thanks for asking. Cause it gets a little awkward. And I have a theory that it's mostly Americans that don't ask me how I'm doing. You have just blown that theory out of the water. And, but as Canadians, we're related, aren't we? I'm a Canadian. How would you designate yourself?
I suppose my passport says I'm British. So let's go with that.
Okay. Well, again, we as Canadians have to be deferential to the British based on our previous history. So I will just say, no problem. I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking. You're in Auckland, New Zealand, presumably on tour. Is that correct?
Yep. Very much on tour. We just flew from Tokyo to here a few days ago. And then next, we're going to Australia.
Wow, that's a whirlwind.
I was about to say, it's the start of a very long tour.
Yes,
we got some laminates the other day, and it was quite scary to see all the dates on one piece of paper.
Scary is an interesting word to use, because we're hearing this a lot from musicians, the daunting nature of touring, how sustainable it is, all these sorts of things. We can get into that in a moment, but I should say, and we should all say, Lewis, are you there? I heard you. I heard you there, Lewis. How's it going?
Hello. I'm very well, thank you. And how are you?
Oh, I'm well. Thanks for asking. It's very kind of you. I appreciate your courtesy and manners. No, it's nice to see you, Lewis. Presumably,
you know
you're not
Americans.
In the same...
Oh, no, we're not in the same hotel. Yeah, sorry. I was about to say, do you know how you said Americans don't ask how you are? The easiest way to confuse an American is to say, are you all right? Which is like a very British term of kind of just saying hello.
Yes.
But if you say to an American, you're right. They get so confused.
What are some of the responses you get to, are you all right? What have you heard back?
In the UK, you should just respond, are you all right back?
Oh.
Or yeah, like, yeah. It's not really a proper question.
So in England, it's just an endless, it's a vicious circle of if someone's all right. You all right? Yeah, you all right? And then it just goes back and forth. I see.
It's
okay.
Almost like some regions in France where they kiss like on the cheek six times. Sometimes it's like, you're right, yes.
This is my new segment, making fun of America. I haven't had this before, but no, it makes sense. You're on tour, Lewis. I see you're not in the same room, but you're also somewhere in Auckland, I hope. Is that true, Lewis?
I think potentially the floor below Florence.
Oh, there you go. So you're in a same building.
Yeah,
that's good. You're in a hotel. So same Wi-Fi. This is good. It's like we're sharing the airwaves together. No, that's nice. Have you been, Lewis, to New Zealand before?
No. I'm very excited to be here.
Nice. How does it feel so far? Does it feel different?
Slightly sore because we only learned yesterday about the hole in the ozone layer here, which means you get sunburnt very quickly.
Oh.
And it wasn't that hot yesterday. I was wearing like a denim shirt and I was wearing a pair of jeans and I got quite sunburnt on my face. So I woke up feeling quite sore today.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that. You look well, if I might say. I don't see it in your face.
Well, that's the lighting.
Yeah, the hotel lighting is attractive to you. I did not know this, Florence, that there is a specific hole in the ozone layer designed specifically for New Zealand. Is that what Lewis just said?
I believe it's over Australia and New Zealand and just this part of the world generally.
Huh.
That yes, I think it's easier to get burnt here. I told somebody this yesterday. In fact, I told Nick, who drums in dry cleaning, yesterday, and I immediately sort of like doubted myself, thinking like, saying that out loud, it sounds mad. But it turns out it's true. And that it is easier to get sunburnt here. So, yeah.
Well, evidently from Lewis's experience, I'm very sad and sorry to hear this. Having learned this information, Lewis, do you go on Wikipedia? Do you dig into why the hole is larger over where you are? Is it your fault somehow? You specifically? Did you figure this out?
I think it's been here for a while. I think it's getting better. So I like to think it's not my fault. Yeah, it's been better since I got here.
Okay, well, this is news. I've had, I will tell you, three artists or guests, I guess, from New Zealand on the show this year. And that's unprecedented. It's never happened before. So something's going on in New Zealand. I had Brett McKenzie and then the Beths. They were all on and I had to do this weird time zone thing. What are the odds you guys made time for me? First of all, thank you so much for making time for me on tour. That's very kind of you. I don't know what I've done to deserve this honor, but thank you so much. But yeah, what are the odds? Another New Zealand call. I'm just trying to figure out time zones. You're also, as I'm speaking to you, it is Monday, December 5th. What day is it in New Zealand, Florence?
I think it's also, it's Tuesday.
Come on.
I was about to say it's also Monday. I haven't got a clue anymore. I've completely lost track of like what day of the week it is, what time it is. But yes, it's Tuesday and it's 10 past 11 in the morning.
In the morning. Oh my God. Okay. Sorry. That's very weird. That's strange.
It's super
weird. Well, jet lag, you okay? You hanging in there? Is it weird? Like you're disoriented or you're okay? It's a right answer from any band traveling. I appreciate that. Yeah, no, that's fine.
I think we're technically the furthest away time zone wise as we can be from the UK. I think at one point in the year you can be 14 hours. By the moment we're plus 13 hours.
It's bizarre. It's so bizarre. Yeah. But I hear the people are very nice. I'm sure, Lewis, if you
they're amazing.
Stop someone on the street and ask for a balm for your sunburn, they'd hook you right up. That's what I think.
Well, I actually had some, when we arrived 2 days ago, I went to the supermarket and they had these paper bags, which we don't really have in the UK. And I put too many items in it. And then while I was walking down the street, it broke like very Home Alone style. And they went all on the floor. And I wasn't too sure how I was going to get my items home because I was like halfway between the shop and our hotel. And some kind lady stopped. Two people actually stopped and both gave me bags.
Oh, that's...
Which is really sweet.
That's lovely.
So people are friendly here.
Yeah, I've heard that about the New Zealand people, and that was my experience, if I may generalize, based on two conversations I had in the year 2022. But they seem very nice. Yeah. So that's lovely. Well, listen, I appreciate the time and place, however bizarre it is. I appreciate the setting. I want to thank you again for being on the show and congratulate you on your work thus far, particularly Stump Work. It's a wonderful record. Florence, I just wanted to say that to you both thank you for being dry cleaning. And how are you feeling? It's been a successful year, I think. It's been a weird year. And I gather from some of the information I received, a tough year for you guys personally. But how are you feeling being in dry cleaning at the moment, Florence?
Great. I mean, yeah, it feels good. It's certainly strange in some ways. It's a strange lifestyle, you know. It's a weird job. But it feels really good.
Yeah.
I mean, we played to like 700 people in Tokyo the other day.
Wow.
Which I mean, I feel sort of a bit speechless about. It's like so far from where we're from. And just, a completely different world in so many ways. And then there are these people there that know our music. It just is really mad.
It's remarable. Do you feel like, I know you're inside of it. It must be hard to tell. I don't know. Florence, have you been in other bands before this one? I should ask you that first of all.
No. Okay. No, this is my first band.
Okay, so you have no way to compare the success and the speed of the success with anything else.
Not really. I mean, I'm also an artist, so I draw and make things. So I guess I can compare the amount of success I had doing that with this, which was much, much less. I know what it's like to make things and the audience for them be small, very yes. small and very localized and basically be your sort of friend group. I know what that's like.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's quite a good comparison in a way.
Yeah.
But not musically, no.
No. Well, this is exciting. I want to get into your foray into music because it seems somewhat unlikely. But what you're just saying, it just seems to be something that kind of happened. So we'll get into that in a moment. Lewis, sort of similar question. Have you played in bands before? Let's start with that.
Too many bands.
A lot of bands?
Yeah, I've played in a lot of bands.
Okay.
Me and Nick were talking about it the other day. I think I've played in like over 30 bands. And he was
30.
I think it's about over 50 for me. Yeah. There's some bands which were just a rehearsal, some bands which was just a one show. Some bands kind of maybe a tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, some bands I'm just like filling in playing bass. I used to do a little bit of session work.
Right.
So I used to kind of just play bass. Apparently there's no bass players in London for about 10 years. So I used to kind of play with just various bands.
Yeah, I had to go through an exercise for someone asked me to be on their own podcast and show. So, and their request was, can you send me 11 songs you've played on? And I thought they were asking me because of this work that I do, but I said, yeah, I can. I've made like 6-7 records myself, but it's true. There was a point, I don't know if you had this, Lewis, but there was a point in the early part of this century where I had a band practice every single day of the week because I was in 5 bands concurrently and had to make that. Have you had that experience?
Oh yeah, 100%. I remember one moment I had 2 rehearsals in one day with 2 different bands, and the drummer from the first rehearsal was having breakfast with her housemate. And she was like, oh, we've got a new bass player today. And then her housemate, a guitarist, was like, oh, we've got a new bass player coming today as well. And it turned out it was me. And I was playing in both their bands for some shows coming up.
It's very weird when you're an in-demand person, I suppose. But also, by the way, I thought London was lousy with bass players and musicians. Why do they all come to you? Lewis, this is a testament to you and your skills and your personality,
you.
I think, right? They all want you, even though there's like... When I was talking about it, it's like a small university town in Ontario, Canada. You're in the heart of London. I mean, is there something about you we need to know? Are you a magical person?
I'm cheap.
Oh, okay. I was not anticipating that in the list of reasons. Okay, you're affordable. Okay, I got that. Now,
I think for a period of time around me, I was the only person who, I think their first instrument was bass.
Ah.
There's a lot of bass players who bass is like their second instrument. Even Nick, the drummer in Dry Cleaning, he's an amazing bass player.
Oh.
But yeah.
How did you get into the bass? So I think bass is smart. That's a smart instrument to take up. Because like everyone needs you at some point. So good thinking there, Lewis. I think you're crafty. I'm going to say that. But what got you into the bass of all the instruments you could have chosen from?
My first instrument was DJing. So from like 14 to like 16, I just had like a set of turntables. And I used to kind of play UK garage and maybe like a bit of hip hop and stuff.
Oh.
And then I went to music college and my dad was like, you need a proper instrument. So his brother had a bass. So I got that bass. hated it. And then about a year later, a college friend came over and was like, you've got a bass. And I played for about a week, then decided to get a bass clef tattooed on me because I was at that age, was very influential to get things tattooed on me.
Right.
And then I kind of had to play bass because I had a bass clef tattooed on my arm. And here I am, 20 years later.
Is that the rules? If you get something tattooed on your arm, it must be your vocation from that point forward? Like,
yeah, I'm gonna keep it going. I'm going to get some other things tattooed.
Okay. But
maybe I can be a Japanese and then I have to learn Japanese.
That's a good call, actually. So just to clarify, when you say you were a DJ, were you into kind of turntablism, like actual?
Yeah.
Like what distinction I'm making is actually learning to scratch and be a hip hop DJ, or were you into more just mixing events and things like that?
Okay, mixing events, but I had the brief period where I was kind of into, was it the DMC championships, where it's purely just scratching and that kind of stuff.
You were in those championships?
No, I wasn't in it. I was into it. Me and my friend would, you could buy like videos of it at the record shop, right, and watch them together and kind of try to do it.
Right. So like Kid Koala, A-Track, these sorts of people, are you familiar with them?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, just making sure. I just want to, that's quite a turn you took from that to bass. So that something must have happened. You got into rock at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly that. It was the Strokes. One day I kind of just found them while watching TV and it kind of changed my musical listening. And it kind of changed it quite quickly. And then I went to college and someone I went to college with kind of pushed lots of bands on me at once.
Oh.
And I kind of jumped into it.
Okay, well, we'll get into your influences in a moment. But same question I asked Florence there, sort of. You've been in 30 bands we've established. Yeah. Were any of them ones we would know? Were any of them ones that were so busy that you were like, this is my life now? Or was it all, like you said, you were kind of jobbing, it sounds like.
Yeah, there was a period where maybe I was doing a handful of shows a month. It was never full-time work.
Okay.
It was at most part-time work. Yeah.
Yeah. So as a musician, you must know success can be one in a million. You don't know, like Florence was saying, like I was an artist and now this is happening and it's surprising. Does the success of dry cleaning thus far, does it surprise you, Lewis? Given the kind of music you're making, I would say, I mean, that's got to be a fact. You're not going for the arenas. Sorry, guys, this isn't meant to be disparaging. I'm not suggesting you're trying to fill a stadium full of people. I mean, it'd be great. I'm sure it could happen. It's so great. I love it. But I'm just saying, you're not going for that commercial sound. You know, you're not going to get on the radio, even though it's happening. I'm babbling a little bit, but I'm trying to defend myself from insulting you. I'm sorry. Now, Lewis, are you surprised, knowing what you know about music and how success works, are you surprised by how quickly dry cleaning seems to have ascended?
How quickly? Yes. It's the first band I've been in, which I listened to for pleasure myself.
Hmm.
So I think maybe that says a lot about it. And I think that kind of, it's the first band where I think my friends have turned around to me when we've released records and been like, this sounds more like you than anything you've done in the past. So I think it's a very true to ourselves project. And I like the idea of the success that we get from it, as in it's like a nice story of being kind of just do the sound you want to make.
Yeah.
And it kind of it worked for us.
Now, Florence, I want to ask you about how you know Lewis and the other members of this band.
Mm.
But since it's Jermaine, had you seen Lewis play music before you started playing together?
Oh, yeah, plenty of times. We'd known each other for about 10 years, something like that, when we started the band. We met when we were like 18, 19, right? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So, yeah, we've known each other for a long time. So, yes, I had seen him perform a lot. He's also, I mean, it's worth saying that he's a great performer. Like, really, people talk about the way that Lewis moves on stage and performs on stage. He's got his own thing. And it's, so I was pretty thrilled to be in a band with him.
Nice. Just to Thanks. Follow up on that. Lewis, do you have any performative heroes, people whose stage presence perhaps influences your own?
I think in the same way where musically I get influenced by stuff, I bring it in and it comes out very different. Like in my head, I think of Tina Weymouth when I'm performing a lot, and I do not look like or act like Tina Weymouth on stage. Now and again, there might be like a slight crab motion sideways, but it never comes out how you want it to.
I've observed this about comedians. When a comedian is about to do an impression of someone else, I can see their whole body. Their physicality is trying to change. It's not just the voice. I've seen it on talk shows all the time. You can see it. Their eyes just change as an actor. So I wonder, Tina Weymouth, a wonderful bass player from Talking Heads, do you picture her? Does she fill your soul as you're turning into Tina Weymouth? How does that work for you?
Yeah, now and again, as in, it's just a nice, you can get distracted so easily on stage and your mind could go in so many different directions.
Right.
So kind of just to focus on someone who you love and adore and to kind of channel their energy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've got it. Okay. Florence, your similar kinds of questions, I suppose. I want to know more about what got you into this realm, to follow up on what you were saying earlier. And within that, do you have musical influences that you can share with us as a writer? And as a very unique singer, I'm curious about those things. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I always find influences tricky because my listening habits are not very linear. I jump around a lot. And I don't often listen to albums. I'm kind of I feel like I'm a shuffler. Remember when shuffle came in as a feature? I was like exactly the right age where from that point on, I just like never listened to albums again. And I always listened to like just tracks on their own. So it's funny. It's like, it's not a really traditional kind of musician's sort of, I can't reel off albums and bands in the same way that some musicians can. And I was always listening as a fan rather than someone who was also making music, because I've only been doing that quite recently. But in terms of writing, there were a few people that I always listened to the words in music. When I was younger, I was a really big Smiths fan. They're definitely the first band I listened to where I felt really excited about the sort of potential of lyrics and the kind of themes, like where things can go beyond love songs. Hmm. Also just like humor, how funny lyrics can be. And also, I'm a big fan of Bjork's lyrics, actually.
Yeah.
I really like, she's obviously writing in a second language, and I enjoy what that kind of leads to. It's almost like sometimes sentences in her writing are very long. And sometimes you can tell when she wants to be really specific or she wants to be more vague. And it's done in such a way that's, I think, potentially influenced by the fact that it's a second language. And I really enjoy the sort of unpredictability of that.
Going back to your love of shuffling.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, there are so many people, really, whose writing I really like. But it's fairly random.
Well, I think everything you're saying checks out in terms of your approach as a singer and as a writer, if I may say. Do you feel like shuffle, like, so for those who am I kidding? No one young listens to this show. Look how old I am. I was going to say, for those who are younger and don't remember shuffle, there might be people who don't know the technology, but shuffle, I think you're referring mostly to the CD. Well, no, I guess iPods had them too, but CD shuffling was quite different. It was like you pressed a button on your CD player, you put your record in, your CD, and you press a button and it just picked its own sequence. So you didn't have to listen to the album in order, which was kind of weird. I didn't understand why that was.
There was also the iPod shuffle.
That's right.
It's that I'm thinking of literally the shuffle. So the MP3 feature.
Right.
Because it's almost hard to remember that was at one time a new thing. that they actually advertised as a feature. They'd show the logo and be like, shuffle. You know, that seems so weird because that's just really normal now.
Do you think, Florence, that shuffle kind of anticipated the prominence of internet music consumption? Because what you're getting, when you say I don't listen to an album, I like to go on shuffle. I'm an albums person myself, and I like, because I think records represent a context. A band is, sorry, I have like, you can see maybe to my left, I have a bunch of records. And if I pull one of those records out and it's from 1965, the odds are good. You can find out what that artist was going through in that week or month they were making the record, or what was going on socioculturally, historically, and how all of that seeps into their music. They may not be writing about a riot or an assassination, but you know it's in the air, right? Because of the context. So I like records for, it's why I don't like, it's funny you say shuffle, because a friend recently reminded me that I told him that I hate greatest hits records. And I said, I said that? I don't remember saying that. I say things I don't remember I say them. That's just who I am. And they said, yeah, it always stuck with me because you said there's no context. Anyway, the shuffle is all about being surprised constantly by something you know, because you put everything on that shuffle. And yet you're like, surprise me, machine, and it does. But now the internet is like this. We're all meant to be generalists. No one knows anything. Oh, I like hip-hop. I like whatever. I like Latin music. And you're like, how can you like all these things? But that's how we came up. Mm. We were open-ended, open-minded music listeners. Anyway, sorry, I went on another one of my rambles. Florence, do you feel like the shuffle has anticipated internet consumption? And do you think you are a product of that, in a sense, in terms of how you write? Because you talk about English as a second language. We'll go through it in a moment, because I have your lyric sheet in front of me. Some of it sounds like English might be your second language, if I might say. Not to be disparaging. I love it. I love it so much. I love reading. My son refers to one song, Quenchy Cups. Am I pronouncing that correctly? He's like,
yeah.
Are you playing the song about the otters? I'm like, yes. Yes, I am. And then my wife was just chuckling at every lyric in the last 2 days, because she finally listen more closely. So it's very funny. Anyway, again, I'm going on a rant and a tangent, but it's complimentary. My point is, do you feel like you are a product of the internet as an artist yourself?
It's hard to say, because I think to a certain extent, it's just part of my personality. I've never been that bothered by, it's almost like the opposite of what you're saying about albums and things and wanting to know the context. I care very much about context, and I think context is kind of almost everything when it comes to subject matter. I think the things around something are far more important than the thing itself, often, and have a lot more to do with the meaning of the thing. Mm. But I also like to totally ignore context. Like, I feel like I don't like knowing a lot about bands or musicians. I feel like it always slightly spoils it for me. Because I always have quite a complete picture in my mind, even if it's like totally sort of made up. And then when I find out the real facts, I always feel a bit sad. And things always lose something for me when I know too much about them. And maybe I've always like collected things, but never like all sort of like bottle caps or something. It's more like I collect things because of the type of thing they are.
Right.
Maybe like the color they are or the size they are. So I'll collect like small things and people will be like, what do you mean small things? And I'll be like, well, just things that are small. And they'll want it to be, oh, do you collect like doll's house furniture? It's like, well, some of it might be, but not all of it. You know, so it's like, maybe it's just like an intuitive thing. I think categories is like not really my thing. It's more just like, just sort of like follow my interest from inside rather than like a prescribed thing.
I think you've answered my question. You are a shuffle person. You are a product of shuffling.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Everything is just different and but it's still yours. Yeah, you are a shuffler. I think that's true. Lewis, do you have a take on Florence's approach to singing and writing? Because you put a band together. I'm not sure of the chronology of this, and maybe you can clarify this, Lewis, but I assume, you know, you have a band, you have musicians gathered, and then you're like, who is going to sing? How are they going to? I can't think of being in a band where we've thought, how is the person going to sing? But maybe you had these conversations. Lewis, what's your perspective on what Florence does exactly in dry cleaning? Keep in mind, she's a shuffler. So we have to be cognizant of that fact with everything you say. But can you speak to that?
Well, the band kind of started as a social gathering, really. And we were kind of, when we invited Florence into the band, it's more just inviting someone into our social gathering, which was mainly eating with a bit of music on the side.
I see.
Yeah. And there was, so myself, Nick and Tom have all been in lots of bands. And when we were talking about inviting someone else in, our first point was we wanted to bring someone in who wasn't a musician, just to kind of change our perspective and kind of like, and how our approach to kind of music, because we've done it for so long and you kind of normalize all the really rubbish points about being in a band. And it's just accepted that you do that.
Yeah.
It's just accepted that you leave work at lunch and kind of miss out half a page to go to soundcheck and kind of, but you don't soundcheck till 7 in the evening because the sound engineer is 4 hours late.
Yes.
And kind of like all these like silly things that you do and you've just been doing it for years. So to bring someone in and then try to explain to them why we do stuff, be like, oh, we don't have to do that. Even when it came down to our social media, that was a conversation that we had quite early, being like, oh, we don't have to do a typical social media where we post pictures of ourselves. So we brought Florence in to kind of to change our perspective, but and also have someone to come in and I kind of maybe thought that Florence is going to be less musical than she actually is. For someone who'd never been in a band, she has like impeccable timing and can recreate what she does, because we improvise a lot and we write while improvising. And then we kind of have to, we find ourselves trying to recreate that in the studio and recreate that live, which is quite daunting sometimes, because sometimes you're like, oh God, that's really tricky. I remember there's a song called Leafy on our previous record, which took me ages to learn the bass line for it again, because it was so all over the place when we demoed it and I hated it. I was like, I'm never going to improvise like that again. I wasn't even improvising. I was just trying to write at the time.
Yeah.
But Florence's approach, and I've never been in a band where the vocalist writes at the same time as the rest of the band, and kind of creates their parts and melodies and kind of rhythms. So that's really interesting, because as a bass player, I get to play off Florence more than I would normally a vocalist.
That's fascinating, because I think with the wonderful band dynamic you have, the singing could have maybe gone in any which direction, but I don't know. I know people apply post to various genre signifiers, and you've gotten some of them. But there are parts of this, like I come from kind of a punk background. So there's parts of it. I'm like, this is like a, could be a post hardcore thing. Like it could be a, I mean, some of it feels very post modern for whatever that means. I don't know if that's necessarily a music genre, but there's like a self awareness to it that I love. I just love the music so much, but you could have easily had someone screaming over every song and we would have been like, yeah, that makes sense. You went a different way, Lewis. Like that's fascinating to me that you have someone who primarily is speaking, but when they aren't, and let's just pretend Florence isn't here right now. And when they aren't, it's a bit like when I hear you sing about Gary Ashby and you put that little lilt in like Gary, like it's so lovely. It like opens up the record all of a sudden. So I just want to go back to Lewis for a second on this. Like, did you articulate what you wanted to, like you talked about the cliches, I think, and what you didn't want, but did you articulate what you thought Florence could be doing within this dynamic? Like, did you guys have a conversation along these lines?
No, I think Nick had sent Florence some Grace Jones tracks.
Is that
correct?
Is that correct, Florence?
It was a host of different things. The Anemic Boyfriends and Grace Jones and Will Powers, a few tracks, but he sort of sent, it was a text with just links, because he knew I was nervous about going to the rehearsal because I kept sort of putting it off. And I think he just sent it just to sort of affirm, like, you can do whatever you want. Like, we don't think you're going to come in and like belt out a tune.
Yeah.
Like, if, like, you can approach vocals in any way. Like, here are a few vocals I love that are not sort of like fantastic. That sounds wrong, because obviously Grace Jones is a fantastic singer. What I mean is, it's not people who've kind of like, you know what I'm saying?
Crooner, like super gifted, multi-octaves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. People where they were sort of born to sing, you know?
Right.
I think he just wanted to, yeah, kind of turn down the heat on what was expected of me, and that I could do it in a creative way.
Had you ever done so this is your first band. Had you ever performed publicly as a poet or any other kind of spoken word artist? Like, you mentioned your visual art background, but have you done? Yeah. Had they seen you do something? The rest of the band, had they seen you do something in public where they thought, yeah, Florence can do this, or no?
No.
No.
That's fascinating.
No, I had written, I'd done little bits of writing that went along with my drawings, almost like captions. I'd done those at college. I went to college with Tom, who plays the guitar in Dry Cleaning, and he'd seen those. But in terms of sort of speaking publicly, the closest I'd got to it was I was teaching in art schools, which obviously sort of involves addressing a room. And I'd, yeah, learnt poems by heart and read them out when I was seven at school or whatever. That was it.
Okay.
What was it?
So, Lewis, did you, in thinking about having Florence in the band, musicians can be very serious people. Let me just level with you. They're very serious. They can be very like, oh, yeah. I want to be
some
taken
way too serious.
I want to be taken seriously. There's no fooling around. We don't like comedy. We're just a serious, oh, look at us brooding photos. But my thing is, like, this band could have gone any, like I said earlier, I think it's fair to say this band could have gone in any which direction based on your front person. Did you, as a band, think it would be nice if this was kind of a laugh? This would be fun. Like, it could be like someone who's like almost a comedian on some level. Did you have those thoughts?
Well, like I was saying, it was more of a social gathering.
Right.
We never planned on really playing any shows. We kind of, when we recorded the first EP, the only reason we recorded it was just to document what we were doing at that point. And our friend Christian owed Nick a favor. But I'd also played in kind of some of his bands and he mainly owed Nick a favor for, I think Nick played some drums with him at some point. So we went in and just for a day, just to record, just to document where we were at that point. And some of the songs wasn't even finished or weren't finished, like Magic and Megan. We were about to just stop recording. And then we were like, oh, we've got this one idea. And he was like, oh, let's just lay it down. And then this became like our first single, I guess. So a lot of it was just like snapshots at certain points. And then from that, some of his friends were playing a show, and then they asked us to play a gig with them. And then they're having a garden party where Christian lives. So we played their garden party, and then shows just started coming in. And, but yeah, we still never thought about, we weren't going to be a band who just like played regularly live or even really put out music.
So a lot of happenstance in this whole story on some level. Is that fair?
Yeah. And as a result, what our main aim for it was just to be fun.
Right.
And just to be like a fun social like gathering.
That's the other thing you might be familiar with in particular, Lewis, is the band you take the most serious does okay, but then the thing you're kind of doing as a goof takes off. I've had that a bunch of times.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? But the thing I care about, why? They're like, no. 10 people are going to come to that thing. But the other thing that you don't care about, 5,000 people are going to show up. You're like, what? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, sorry, that's just my own history here. But Florence, I didn't
know. I relate to that a lot.
Right. Coming from your background, you'd have the same thing, right? Because you're doing this and it's fun. But it seems to me, I don't know if you feel this way, but it could have gone either way. If you would probably have been like, yes,
yeah,
there's 10 people here. I understand that. But now you're at 700 people in Tokyo and you're trying to understand that. Is that fair?
It's certainly the thing I've done in my life where I've tried the least. and also not just tried the least, but actively didn't give a shit whether people would understand it or
yes.
not. Whereas before I was always making things, thinking very much about the audience.
Right.
And really dearly wanting people to understand it. And doing this, as Lewis is saying, because it was never a plan for anyone to hear it, it was like, whatever. I mean, like a lot of times in the rehearsal room, it's hard to hear the vocal anyway. So,
yes.
So kind of purely, to begin with, at least, and even still now, there are times when we're writing where it really is just for me. I mean, like, because I am literally the only person who can hear it. And obviously I have a knowledge now that there's going to be an audience at some point. But I don't know, whenever we're playing or writing, my brain doesn't really have the capacity to think about that many things.
Yeah.
I kind of just think about doing it. So at least while we're writing, I really am just thinking about what I think of it.
Fair enough.
And that's the first time I've ever done that. In the past, I so dearly wanted to do something that connected with people.
Yes.
that I, it's all I was thinking about.
Right. Right. And that's,
can I add to that as well? I think that's kind of, I've said this recently. I think part of what I think anyway is the secret of like our success in whatever way. Because there's an honesty to like, I think how everyone performs and how everyone writes. It's just, we're kind of writing for ourselves and for each other at the moment. And when we're writing, we never think about where it's going to go.
Yeah.
We never think that we're going to be playing this song 13 hours in the future in New Zealand.
Right. Yeah. So again, I think there's just like going with the flow for everyone involved. That's important. And it's hard to do that because people want to take it very seriously. Florence, I earlier was mentioning to Lewis that musicians can take themselves very seriously. I was suggesting that you have a comedic lilt to your approach. And I realized as I was saying it, uh-oh, what if she's a serious musician and she doesn't like that I'm saying this? Do you view yourself? Because I will say, and we will go through some lyrics, I hope, in the time we have left. I really appreciate the poetry of what you're doing. I appreciate the observational quality to it. I appreciate, because you're a shuffler, the decontextualized nature of it. Like, it feels very much like found sound conversations that make it in. And you're like, I know that that's part of your process. So it makes it make more sense to me, even though sometimes it doesn't cohere in a traditional sense. All this to say, are you a serious person? Are you a self-serious person? Or do you feel like you're trying to bring a fun aspect to this band? Because your vocals are very high in the mix. You are a focal point here. It's not like a tossed off idea that we're going to have this sort of quasi spoken word singer. It seems very deliberate, but do you take it like, are you insulted when people say, oh, that's very funny? Or are you like, good?
Oh, no. I mean, I think I do take it very seriously.
Yes.
I think I'm probably quite a serious person, but I don't consider something being funny to not be serious.
That
you
is
know, I care a lot about humor, you know. It's probably one of the things I think about the most. I'm one of those annoying people where occasionally if something's funny, I'll want to talk about why. Which is like a nightmare. That's like the most boring thing you can do, you know, like analyze the funniness of something. It totally kills it like immediately.
Well,
and
maybe.
When I'm in a group, I do have to like try to not do that. Like not talk about like, oh, that's really funny because when he said that earlier, it was like this. Da, 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 da. And I can see that people are like, yeah, yeah. Like, shut up.
you're ruining the kind of thing we liked about it by talking about it too much.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I do things like that sometimes. So it's kind of, yeah, both, I guess. I really liked silliness. I like to be silly. It's like one of the things that it calms me the most. I'm happiest when things are just kind of absurd and unexpected things happen. I really like silliness.
Well, it seems to me maybe, and I know you mentioned some potential influences and whatnot, but are you someone who feels like just being a lead singer in a band is inherently sort of silly? Like just the
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like my main sort of hook into this role of being the front person, in that I find it really easy to sort of laugh at the whole premise.
Yeah.
And also laugh at the fact that it's me doing it. I feel an unlikely person. And also something I do find funny is like that there are lots of times when I find it kind of inherently painful to be the front person.
Yeah.
And that is funny to me. Like the idea of somebody sort of squirming the whole time, but doing this thing that is like basically about showing off, or often about showing off. Or wanting lots of attention, but it's like, if you don't want it, I don't know, there's something just funny about that to me. I don't even mean sad funny, I mean literally funny. I do find the whole thing very amusing. it's kind of tragic. It's something like, yeah, I don't know, yeah.
It's tragic?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know. It just seems like a hilarious thing to accidentally wind up doing.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm, I think that's what I'm getting at. I want to read some lyrics here from Quenchy Cups. I alluded to this song earlier. By the way, I had to Google Quenchy Cups to be like, what in the hell is a Quenchy Cup? And it turns out, is it like a little juice box or something? Or
yeah,
is that right?
What normally happens is when we have these like jam sessions moments, Nick will record them to his phone so we don't forget them. And he will just name it whatever we've been talking about or the first thing that comes to his mind. And sometimes it sticks as a title. And I guess that's one of those situations. Yeah.
Lewis, do Quenchy Cups still exist?
I think so. Yeah.
They probably should
be banned by now. It's one of those ones that's got lots of like illegal E numbers and chemicals. And I don't think they taste good.
I Googled it and I don't think I could find a product after 1998. So yeah, I feel like something happened.
There'd be a shop somewhere.
That's about the last time I drank one. We used to get given them at school, and I think 98 is probably the last time I had a Quenchy Cup.
I want to read a couple of sections here because this made my wife laugh a lot today. I'm pro tidy.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
I just want you to know. I'm pro tidy. A lot of faff. Don't push the door. Automatic door. St. Mark's trousers. My trousers. Your trousers. Can you not? And then later, a polite bus boarder, a seat swapper, secret filmer. All of this makes me laugh. I will tell you that. I picture it all happening. But what does being pro-tidy mean exactly? That's the one where my wife literally said, did she just say, I'm pro-tidy? I really like that. And she sent it to her friends who have like British... I don't know. She viewed it as kind of British or something. Is that an expression? What does that mean?
No, it's not an expression. it's always a surprise to me when things come across as British because, yeah, it's a byproduct.
It's your delivery, yes.
It's a byproduct of, it's not intentional. But pro tidy. I think I like to be tidy. but maybe it's also to do with, you know, so I often struggle to be organized, you know, so I'm sort of doomed to be a person that loves tidiness, but just like can't be or struggles to be.
So this is autobiographical. I said earlier that this feels very observational. Like maybe you overheard someone say something. Is there some balance between what you're conveying about yourself and what you're just picking up from people as you're walking around?
It's a blurred thing. Yeah. You know, like some of it will be, I feel like, but that's like the mind, isn't it? You know, it's like your own stuff and other people's stuff all just sort of in a big soup, which is sometimes one of the things that makes it hard to think, you know, sometimes if you're like empathetic or whatever, especially, you know, if you're alone, you can kind of connect with what your thoughts actually are. But around other people or also perhaps if you're anxious, I'm a bit anxious. And I find that sometimes my thoughts and feelings, other people's thoughts and feelings and things that you see and things you hear are all just like a big flan.
Yeah, I don't want to
in your mind.
I don't want to play this callback too hard, but it seems to me your whole brain might be on shuffle. You just, everything is like,
I mean, maybe
not in a bad way.
I think, but I mean, is anyone's not?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some people are just very sort of, one track and, are able to kind of, maybe you have to be a Zen master or something, or, maybe that's a different, we met one just a week ago, but anyway, yeah, we did. So maybe that's the thing. But yeah, for me, yeah.
Okay. I appreciate
it's loud.
That.
It's loud in there.
It's loud in your brain, in your mind?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can tell. I just want you to know. I can kind of tell. Lewis, do you have any take on Florence's lyrics on this particular record? And within that, I wonder if you, I know, my condolences to you, Lewis, in particular. I understand you lost someone very close to you, and I'm going to ask you to speak on that because I think it's relevant to this band and this record. Can you talk a little bit about the circumstances in terms of making this record and how you feel they might inform maybe what Florence is singing about and maybe also the mood of the record generally?
Yeah, sure. So what was it, a week after New Long Leg came out, my mum passed away. And she was a big champion of the band, like a big reason why the band started, really. Like, I think she encouraged Florence to kind of continue coming to rehearsals. And kind of, when I talk about the social gathering that Dry Cleaners started as, I think my mum was kind of a part of that as well. And kind of, she was the one who was kind of like feeding and entertaining us. So she'd been ill for like 3 years by this point, like terminally ill. We kind of knew she was going to kind of go at some point.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for you.
I feel very fortunate in lots of ways, because when she first got diagnosed, she had 2 months to live, and she lived for like another three. So I got to know her a lot better, and she kind of got to see me get to a point, like artistically and kind of like career wise with this band, where things were kind of about to start, kind of like the record came out and went to number four in the album charts, and then she died like 2 days later. So I was kind of like, I was always quite happy that she got to see that, because she got to see, because she'd been really supportive. Like my bass, she bought me my bass, and kind of like, she'd like always been really supportive, like, and kind of helped me do music as much as she could and as much as I could. So that was always nice to see. So there's lots of blessings within her death that I feel fortunate about. But yeah, we were writing, the months before she passed away, the day before she passed away, we was in the studio, the day she got put into a hospice. And then we kind of started writing again like 2 weeks later. And I think... And I think the distraction that the band gave myself, but also like each other and my family as well at that point, where it was like a very confusing, obviously, time, I think was extremely like helpful and powerful. And I think Florence's... like humor within her lyrics, kind of the sadness to the humor, like the quick snap, is one of my favorite things in life. I've definitely like, I've never laughed as hard as kind of like the day my mum died, kind of like, and like moments of waiting outside the hospital, kind of like waiting for bad news, kind of like sat in the car with my family and we're kind of joking and throwing around jokes. And like, yeah, that kind of humor kind of like keeps you alive, but also it's amazing. And I think Florence kind of does that well in her lyrics as well, how there's really, it'd be like comical, and then she goes like a really serious lyric, like "It's Europe" always gets me in the strong feelings, and those moments I really enjoy.
Well, I want to say that I appreciate your candor, and I appreciate, this is heartening to hear, if I may. Like that's lovely, and again, I my condolences to you and your family. But it sounds like you see blessings in there. Speaking of lyrics that might capture such moods. Again, I don't mean to dwell on Quenchy Cups, but the first line, things are shit, but they're going to be okay. This is kind of how I've been feeling this for like the last two odd years, let's say, in particular. Like things seem bad. Florence, like I was trying to get to earlier in terms of autobiography, it does seem like you approach your songwriting from a balance of autobiography and universal kind of themes. How did this circumstance for the band in particular, can you see it? I know it might be hard for you to be objective, but do you see how it informed where you went with some of your ideas as a lyricist here?
Very much. I think there were definitely moments that felt so bald in a way, where emotions were so raw and real things were happening, you know, not just kind of like, oh, you've had a bit of a bad day or whatever, but, you know, life things where you're coming to terms with the end of somebody's life, an incredibly important person, the end of their life, and you're facing the fact that they're not going to be around anymore and what that means for the people around them, like real things. I think certainly I felt unable to write in as much of a veiled way as I had before. You know, things like things are shit, but they're going to be okay kind of is so basic in some ways. And I don't think I'd really written like that before. I think I was always interested in layering things and maybe even trying to disguise feelings or, trying to write things that had multiple interpretations. But I think a lot on this record, there's more writing that is a bit more automatic, where there's a sense that we needed to write things to hold ourselves together, you know. And so it just felt more direct.
Yeah.
Somehow, if that makes sense.
It does. I alluded to one of the catchiest songs on the record, Gary Ashby. And I wonder if, so on the surface of it, just so people understand, it's about your family. Is it your family's tortoise, Florence?
No.
Okay. But it's about a family that names their tortoise, like it has their family name, basically. I'll just read.
Yeah.
We gave you our family name in the lockdown you escaped. Gary Ashby, it was a bad surprise. Have you seen Gary? So people are clearly missing their tortoise. On the surface, very funny. Yeah. But what I couldn't help but think of is, oh, this is Florence thinking about family, the dynamic of family, as Lewis and others in your band struggled with the difficulty of, you know, being in a family, like the joy and pain of being in a family. So I wonder if that's what you mean. Like, it's kind of a veiled way of talking about family dynamics and what you go through as a family together, losing a pet. Mm. In this case, it's a little absurd, but I feel like that's, I don't mean to disparage the tortoise community, but I don't know too many people who have this situation where it runs off. How can it even run? Anyway, my point is, is that a way of you metaphorically dealing with something personal?
Totally. I always thought of that song as being about family chaos.
Yes.
And difficult things. And it really occurred to me the other day that it's sort of written from the perspective of a child, which I didn't really realize until quite recently. I was like, this is weird. I'm sort of like being a child in this song. Yeah. That wasn't really something I thought about. It just happened that way. And it's almost like thinking about that childlike perspective where bad things are happening that are grown up things, but the sort of knock on effects are a child level things, like things going wrong with pets or things being disorganized. Yeah, like that, the thing about dad's got blood on his head.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, walking with my dad going to school. It really stuck in my mind. He walked past like this rose bush and it had big thorns on it, obviously. And it scratched the top of his head and this massive drop of really thick blood like rolled down his forehead. And it was like very shocking to me as a child, because it was like that moment of like, oh, my dad can get hurt. Yes.
Right.
You know, and I'd really like never seen that before, because I thought of him as like a really tough, just an untouchable guy. And this funny little accident happened just as we were walking to school, and he was just kind of wiping off, going, oh, scratched my head. And he thought it was nothing, you know, he just wiped it off. But I was like shell shocked. and that's really stuck with me as something that was kind of quite. And, you know, maybe that's a little of what we sort of saw in the last year or so, where something happens where you feel like you've leveled up a bit in life.
Yeah.
But you think, right, okay, bad things can happen that are maybe on a scale that I hadn't really sort of felt before.
It's interesting to me that you invoked being shell-shocked when we were talking about a song about a tortoise. That was quite a connection that you made there. I'm shell shocked by the song. In fact, no, I appreciate everything you're saying. Are there things about the record that people have processed in a way, Florence in particular, that have surprised you? Like, cause I think,
always
there are. Yeah.
Yeah. Always. I think, it astounds me that I just thought people would think it was a load of old nonsense, maybe, or like, I don't know, like when I'm aware that the way I write can come across obscure. Obviously, I'm aware of that. Mm. And I'm always really pleasantly surprised by people's imaginations, how they can link things together that are so, the real reason things are written is so specific, really, and often so personal that there is no way somebody could know why one line comes after another or something like that. But it still seems to come across in a whole variety of different ways. People apply their own stuff to it. And that thrills me, really. I think that's really great. I really like that.
I just want to say I appreciate what you were saying about being surprised that people thought or recognized maybe that song, Gary Ashby, was being sung from a child's perspective. I don't want to go too far down this road, but how many of us have heard adults talk to their pets like they're babies?
Oh, God.
Guilty.
That baby talk. Yeah. So I allude to your singing. Have you seen Gary? Mm-hmm. Have you seen Gary Ashby? Like, your voice is up like a child's almost. And so maybe that's what people are picking up on, that innocence of like, can you help me? Where is Gary? But I think an adult with an animal becomes a child. And it's right. Very fascinating. Anyway, that's just my armchair psychology. I don't mean to bombard you with, but there's some to it there. And I feel like that's swimming around in this record that, the innocence of an adult and a child, I feel like is swimming around quite like, maybe we'll see otters. Are there otters? We'll see this instead. Like, I don't want to extract too much meaning from this in a sense, because I, like you, I appreciate the mystery, but there is this like childlike curiosity to your lyrics here in particular that I find fascinating. And I think it speaks to kind of that family dynamic of, oh my God, my dad can get injured. Oh my God, we're mortal beings. Like, I thought he would be here forever. That's a huge revelation for a child. Anyway. Yeah. Similar kind of question for you, Lewis. Is there anything about the reception to Stump Work or dry cleaning generally that has surprised you to the point where you're irritated? it's not exactly the same question, but as you go forward, people foist things upon you. You're this, you're that. Is there anything that you're like, the reception to this record or the band generally, where you're like, cut it out. Enough. I don't want to hear this anymore. Anything like that?
You kind of touched on it earlier when you kind of just said post. We went through, we're kind of out of the other side of it now, but we went through a long period where people just saw all spoken words, well, with a guitar, as post-punk. And that was all post-punk is just spoken word with a guitar.
Yeah.
Which I think kind of did benefit us when it came to the media slightly. People would write articles about spoken words. So we kind of rode that wave a little bit.
Yeah.
But I hope with the new record, we've kind of opened it up, especially with like Anna Calls from the Arctic, to kind of show, because I don't have an issue with the term post-punk. Most of the records I listen to are post-punk. It's just not the genre that people refer to it as now. I see it as like post-punk is like an early 80s thing.
Yes.
Kind of like a
Gang of Four,
kind
of like, or something.
Yeah. And kind of like Grace Jones, and kind of like my favorite record label is like Z Records. And kind of like, it's like noise to disco. And I kind of just call that all post-punk. Obviously called No Wave as well. But kind of like, I kind of just see that as like post-punk. So I hope we've kind of, that's opening it up a bit, because it felt very lazy and it kind of got a bit boring after a while of just people calling it post-punk. And I hope us as a band have kind of reopened up that term slightly. If people want to keep calling us post-punk, let people go, oh yeah, it's not just British bands who do spoken word and guitar.
Do you pay much attention? So are you, just to focus in on Stump Work, like, do you pay much attention, Lewis, to what people are saying about your band or this record?
Not really. No. I think, unlike the rest of the band, I quite like reading comments, because I look for the nasty ones.
Right.
Because it just amazes me that, like, if there was a forum and people were just talking about our band and people were saying horrible things about us, fine. But how, when people tag you and say nasty things, it just amazes me how someone would do that.
Yeah, someone just did that to me recently, and I was like, what? Why?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. The first time ever, actually. I don't think I've had it with this show, but they didn't like something I did, and they tagged me. And you know what I got to do? I delete it.
It was one of those ones
where you can delete it. I'm like, why would I want this on my wall? It's my wall you're writing on there. So I deleted it. And then I found out on another thing, the same guy apologized to me. Oh, I'm sorry I put that on your wall. Because I took what they were saying. You know what? You are like me, Lewis. We have the negative bias. You can get 10 comments, 9 of them positive. The one negative, you're like, I'm writing to that person. I'm going to change that person's mind, maybe.
Unfortunately, I don't write to them. But I quite enjoy how kind of pathetic it is. I don't mind people saying bad things about us.
I guess I don't.
I kind of view it as pathetic if you do it directly to the band. And if it's like nasty things, I'm like, what are you trying to prove?
Yeah, it's weird.
So I quite enjoy it. Yeah.
People are weird. I feel like there's the subtext of a lot of Florence's lyrics are that people are strange and weird.
That's very strange.
I pick up on.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, I know you're in New Zealand and there's lots going on there, so I don't want to keep you much longer. I appreciate this conversation. I love your band. I love this record. So congratulations about all those things. Florence, I usually wrap up things by asking questions about future plans. Lewis was just saying that you're on tour for the next 17 years. So that's all booked up. There's nothing else for you to do. Yeah. And people, where can people go? Yeah. Here's my questions. Are you working on new stuff? Are there new songs percolating? Anything else new you want to tell us about? And we can go back to Lewis for this. I usually ask people to tell me and my listeners where they can go to learn more things. Let's stick to the project oriented or plans things right now for you, Florence. What's coming up next for Dry Cleaning?
Well, yeah. So as you say, we're touring a lot, US, Europe, all start of next year.
Yeah.
And obviously the UK. And then we get a very rare bit of time off. Which I'm sure... Mm.
Which we asked for.
Yes.
Yeah, we asked for it. Absolutely, yeah. But I mean...
Oh, Flo, tell them how we got the time off. Do you remember who told us to take time off?
Oh, okay. The catalyst for us getting time off was Simon Le Bon of Duran Duran.
Oh, what?
Telling me that we should make sure we got some time off. And... pretty much straight away, I went to Lewis and I said, Simon's just told me that we should ask for some time off. And then I think we probably sent an email pretty much straight away.
I messaged our manager straight away being like, we need time off. Simon Le Bon says.
Sorry, was this a dream you had? Or what was running with Simon Le Bon all about?
We supported them. They played a show at Castle Howard, which is a big stately home in Yorkshire in the UK. And... we supported them.
Nice, that's great.
And it wasn't the festival. It was just us and them.
Good.
It was just us and them.
I can see some kinship
and
there.
And Simon Le Bon walked into our dressing room and was like, hello, Florence. Hello, Lewis. Hello, Nick. Hello, Tom. Knew all our names.
Oh, amazing.
And knew loads about us. It was so sweet.
I bet they're very nice people. I think, when you have that much success so quick, like you guys, in a sense. Although I think they were doing a fair amount before they really broke through. Around the world, as I recall now. But they probably saw some of themselves in you guys somehow, maybe. I don't know. Who knows?
They were extremely nice. And yeah, so a bit of time off. I mean, I tend to write all the time, you know, like when things come up, I'm always writing things in my phone. That's kind of primarily where I write, which doesn't sound very cool, but it's true.
Oh, everyone does it. People are making records on their phones.
It's normal.
Yeah,
it's normal. So yeah, but I'm sure probably in that little bit of time off, we might find time to do a little bit of writing around April, I reckon. We work pretty fast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. That's great. So Lewis, sort of similar question from your perspective. Is there new music percolating between the band itself beyond what Florence is working on? Sorry, you're all in the same band. Don't get me wrong. You know what I mean? The instrumentalists. Is there stuff percolating?
Well, normally it's all of us at the same time.
Okay, there you go.
Create. Yeah. And in Osaka, which was the last show we did, a kind of like an idea came out. It's never kind of like someone's playing a part and they look at someone else in the band and be like, hey, do you mind playing on this? It's quite a natural organic. Everyone just starts playing.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of constantly writing, and there's a few tracks and stump work which kind of came from... There's a period in lockdown when New Long Leg came out where we had to do like lots of live sessions, and there was live sessions which we couldn't travel to.
Mm.
So we'd kind of do like a day of live sessions for different platforms. And a few songs came from that because we kind of just sat around with our instruments.
Oh.
And it's kind of when we're not thinking about writing, I think it's our most prolific time. As in, I always say at the beginning of a rehearsal, in the first like half hour while we're setting up, and in like the last half hour, when everyone's kind of given up, is when we write most of our parts. Kind of like, that's when, we can have an 8-hour rehearsal. And in that first half hour and last half hour is where like 90% of ideas come from.
It's magical. I hope, I appreciate that you identify that. It is really letting go. it seems to me letting go for all of you has led to this, like led to this success. And I mean success not in a crass way. I just mean like it's fulfilling when you create something this way. And together, like you're a real unit, and it that's success to me, like spiritual success.
Well, I said this the other day. What I get excited about this band as in what it's going to bring out of me, as in like musically, as in I get excited when I'm holding my bass with everyone else around, the rest of the band around me, to see what kind of comes out. Because we don't plan for it. We don't sit down and be like, let's write a song like this. Let's kind of like, oh, we should go like slightly higher tempo, or we need like a shorter song. Like, it just kind of what naturally comes out. So that is what excites me most about this band, I think. It's kind of, I have no idea what the next song is going to be.
That's
and it could be today. We could write five songs today and we can sound check. Like, you never know. Yeah.
No, that's great. I really am happy for you. This is even what you're describing is one in a million, going back to what I said earlier. So I hope it continues, and it sounds like it will. So that's great. Florence, if people want to learn more about dry cleaning, do you know where to send them in terms of the computers and the phones?
Yeah, I mean, our Instagram is extremely inactive, but it is where a lot of information about us is. You know, we have a website with merch and all that kind of thing. But yeah, our Instagram is probably the best place. It's at Dry Cleaning Band. Yeah, we've got a link there with everything you'd want to know, like tour dates and stuff like that. And we tend to post when either something fairly big happens or, yeah, gigs really. So, yeah, it's all there. That's the portal.
The portal is Instagram. Does any one of you or more than one of you have the keys to the Instagram? Is a follow-up question. Is anyone forbidden from having the key to the Instagram?
No, not at all. It's pretty much the only place that you can reach us, like DM wise and all that kind of thing. Like we man it. We're not particularly efficient at it, but we are there, you know, like we're on the other side of it. So
okay, that's good.
And to back that up, as in a guitar pedal company who I like sent us a message about a year ago being like, hey, do you want some free stuff? And I haven't replied to them. So people should be offended if we don't reply. Because even things I want. Yeah.
Lewis, you better get on that DM. You need that stuff.
I know, exactly. I need it.
All right. Well, this I want to go out on a song from Stumpwork, and I wonder, okay, this is always curious. When I have two people on from the same band, I'm going to pick one of you to choose it, but it's subject to debate. One of you can veto the other one, and then we have to go through like a parliamentary procedure to get the song approved. It's a bit arduous, but I hope we can have some agreement, I guess is where I'm coming from. Florence.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to pick the song. Lewis, this means you have veto power and you can pick something else. We can have a debate. Florence, can you pick a song from the new album for us to play for people right now?
Yeah, I would choose No Decent Shoes for Rain.
And why would you choose that song?
I'm really fond of it. It's my favorite at the moment. We also recorded it. It's a first or second take. So it was a bit of a surprise that it turned out, you know, that we like it so much. You know, we don't usually just rattle things off like that. And I think we all thought it was like a first run through, but there was just something a bit magic about it.
Does this not also have a complimentary reality TV style music video?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does.
Some behind the scenes footage and
I thought about that.
spy footage, it seems like. Like some of you don't even know you're being filmed through windows and you're putting on your mask and just trying to live your lives and someone's surveilling you. Is that okay? I'm describing it for everyone.
It's shot like we shot it. It's us filming it. I think almost exclusively, but it's a little bit while we're on tour and a little bit at Rockfield where we recorded the album.
Yeah.
Lots of us sitting on sofas basically.
I feel like I got to know you from that video a little bit. Like I will say, has an intimacy to it. Like I got your personalities came through and it made me relax a little bit because we don't know each other. I didn't know what it was going to be like. You know, you're very serious. We agreed. You're self-serious musicians. Don't like to have a laugh. Just kidding. Sorry. It's very funny and very charming. Lewis, the ball's in your court. Do you veto this selection or do you agree?
It was a lovely selection, wasn't it? I agreed with all of, I've never been in a debate class before. We don't have debate class in the UK, but I do agree with all of Florence's points. It is also one of my favorite songs on the record. And it's one of my favorite songs to currently perform live. We get to, I get to improvise a bit kind of in my parts towards the end of the song, which I always quite enjoy doing as well. But I feel like you've mentioned Crunchy Cups quite a lot of times now, and I feel like your audience kind of need to hear that song.
Well, here's the thing. By the time they hear this, I will have made it so that the introduction of this episode, let's say under when I introduce you guys in post-production, really behind the mirror here, I'll put Quenchy Cups there, and it'll be like a bed.
Well, I take back my point then. And
no, it's a valid valid point. I'll give them a little sip of Quenchy Cups, if you know what I'm saying, and then it'll fade out, and then we'll be talking. They'll hear us talking for like an hour, and then at the end they'll hear this song and No Decent Shoes for Rain, and that's it. That's how it'll work. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that's like a nice happy medium where everyone's happy.
Everyone's happy. This song, by the way, I don't know if this is a coincidence, references New Zealand. Did you know that when you picked it?
No.
It's another Creative Control miracle. All right, let's just hear now.
Well, but you know what? You know what the problem with that is? Okay. Every time we play somewhere and the name of the place is in the song, I get really distracted and I forget the words. Like this happens in, I remember the first time
it happened
played,
in Tokyo.
Yeah, it happened in Tokyo. The first time we played in the Netherlands, there's a line in Strong Feelings that goes, figures in a Dutch landscape. And I completely zoned out immediately after that line because I was obviously sort of staring at a room full of Dutch people. And something short-circuited in my brain at that moment, and then I forgot all the rest of the words. So that's probably going to happen tonight with this.
Well, it also may happen in New Zealand. It may also have to happen in France, Switzerland, Northampton, Exeter, and Egypt. They're all mentioned. These are all things you got to mark on your calendar. It's like, I don't know what's going to happen.
I'm
just teasing. Just making jokes. This is No Decent Shoes for Rain by the wonderful band Dry Cleaning from their beautiful album, Stumpwork, one of the best of 2022. Florence, Lewis, I really enjoyed this myself. I hope you did too. I hope we speak again someday. Best of luck in the future.
Thanks very much, Vish.
Thank you very much. Lovely to meet you.
New Zealand, France, Switzerland, Northampton, Exeter, Egypt. It won't do to cry about it. I've seen a rat. I've seen a guy cautioned by police for rollerblading. Let's smoke and drink and get fucked. I don't know. Let's eat pancake. Take control of my mind or body anytime. Why do I trust you? The answer is I don't, and I never will. Let's eat pancake. I'm bored, but I get a kick out of buying things. Autonomy can be found at the shops. For me. For me. Who are you? That's right. You're from the 70s. I've got to travel back in time to stop this madness. Don't do this, don't do that. My poor heart is breaking. Too big for a large. Too big for a large. Hey, couch testing man, lay it on my fire-mended car. Frying egg on my bonnet. These lonesome evenings suck. Oh, you drink wine and go on holiday now? Okay, well. Okay, well. Okay, well. Good to meet you, but not here. Not here, obviously. I've seen your arse, but not your mouth. That's normal now. I'm Sandy and Felt Mel. Especially on a day like today. Can you describe the picture with me? What are all these men carrying? What is this toxic sludge? I don't know. By police for rollerblading.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh.
This has been a pretty great year for me in terms of music discovery, just getting into bands that I've kind of heard about a little bit and then actually digging into their catalogs or their new records and whatnot, and feeling that feeling of like, holy Lord, this is great. It's exciting to discover new music. Dry cleaning is no exception to this. I just want to thank Florence and Lewis for making time for me to talk about dry cleaning on this, the 740th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts, pretty much. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkhanna.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Instagram and Twitter and Hive, which may or may not replace Twitter for me, I don't know, at vishkhanna. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain and support the work that is done on this otherwise independent podcast. $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive content, like you get the episodes early. Sometimes I dig into my audio archives and resurrect some old tape from previous radio or print interviews, and I put them up there. As we're speaking, I enjoyed watching Steve Martin and Martin Short host Saturday Night Live, because I have to review it for a magazine. And I watched it. I just qualified that because I imagine people are like, you watching SNL every Saturday, Vish? I'm like, yeah, well, I have to. It's part of my job. But I love them so much, and I talked to them 3, 4, 5 years ago. It was a true honor to talk to Steve Martin and Martin Short. That's the kind of stuff. That wasn't meant for the radio. It was meant for a print thing, but I find it in my hard drives and whatnot, and I say, hey, let's present this. So anyway, it's that kind of stuff. And also, if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt at that $6 or more level, message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. Thanks again to the wonderful Alberta record business, record retailer, Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and order things from their website there, blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on Creative Control. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Dry Cleaning. I hope you found it interesting and compelling. And if you don't know the band, you'll check them out. And if you do know the band, I hope you gain some insight into them as people and their process. And I hope you will subscribe to this podcast or follow it on whatever you use and tell your friends all about it. That helps a lot. All right, I gotta go. I'll talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.